yesterday?
Good. Thank you. But no, we did do the last part that we discussed about it.
Okay.
If we could, given time, we could have probably, but not using LLCC.
The last part?
Right, the maximum.
Yeah, that was just the contact part, right?
Right. So, you know, there's a mention of LLCC, which I think it's.
Oh, that was the conclusion that you're supposed to draw, that you could do entanglement concentration. So the point of that problem, well, there were a couple of points, but the main point I wanted to illustrate with that problem was that you can see why the entropy is a measure of entanglement. Specifically, in a kind of operational sense, because you can go from n copies of this partially entangled state that has entropy s of rho to n times s of rho copies of a maximally entangled state. Right? So s of rho really does, in a strict sense, count the amount of entanglement that you can get out of this particular state. You can't really get it out of one copy very well, because that would be some fractional amount. But out of enough copies, then you can kind of combine them all into more easily usable states. Okay. So there were no questions on that. How about on the other stuff you've been doing? Okay. Okay. Then let's get started. So the topic I want to talk about today is what it means for two states to be close to one another. So this has shown up a couple of times this week. Most of the stuff I've done has been kind of exact. But occasionally there's been a question or some aside or something about, well, what if the state is not exactly the way you want it to be? So what I'd like to do today is talk more about what it means for a state to be close to the right state. And there's a couple of different notions of how one can do this. And of course, they're related. So OK, so for pure states are always easy. So for pure states, kind of the obvious notion of whether two states are close or not is the fidelity. So the fidelity is, well, you have psi and phi, and you take the inner product. And I guess maybe it's worth taking the absolute value. OK. So I don't want to take the absolute value, because that lets fidelity be a real number. And it'll be a real number between 0 and 1, once we take the absolute value. And 0 means that psi and phi are orthogonal. And 1 means that they're the same, up to some global phase. Right? So that gives you a nice continuous spectrum of states that are identical when fidelity is 1 to as different as possible when it's 0. Okay? And of course, you can have anywhere in between. Okay. So this fidelity, let's call it f, has an operational measure 2, has operational meaning 2. So if we want to know if the state is psi, then we can make the measurement. So we can just make a projective measurement here. One projector is psi. So if it is psi, we'll say yes. And the other projector is the orthogonal subspace, 1 minus psi. Okay? And if the state is actually phi, Well, then the probability that when we do this measurement, that we get the result that it's actually psi. I mean, so we get the result that we think it's psi, think it was psi. Of course, it's been changed by the measurement. So the probability of the psi result well, what's that? That's the inner product absolute value squared. So that's just f squared. Okay. So this fidelity relates to the probability that if we make a measurement associated with one of the states on the other one, that will get them confused. It's kind of a measure of how easy it is to confuse these two states. Okay. So let's generalize this a little bit. It turns out there's a somewhat mysterious formula that arises when they're both mixed states. So let's take an intermediate step, and let's say that one of them is pure and one of them is mixed. So rho, of course, could be a pure state. It could just be phi phi. But this will also apply to a mixed state. So in that case, well, if we take rho and we make the measurement, this same measurement, well, now the probability that we'll get the psi outcome is this. Okay? And so let's, again, let this be equal to f squared. You can see that this is a positive number because it's if you take the adjoint. Well, okay, so it's yes, it's not maybe it's not immediately obvious that it's positive. You have to write rho as a sum of no, sorry. Because rho is positive, this is positive. And it's real, that should be straightforward. Okay. Okay. So this of course it turns out it's going to be easier when we generalize. It's going to be easier to think of this as this. So there's one obvious generalization to the case where they're both density matrices, which is to take trace rho sigma. That turns out not to be the right generalization. That's basically the Hilbert-Schmidt norm, so it has some applications too. But the correct generalization for fidelity is this. Okay, so square root. So we have square root of rho appearing two places here. So that's a little peculiar. Square root of rho. Well, the easiest way to calculate that is you diagonalize rho, and then you take the square root of all the diagonal elements. And then of course we have sigma in here, as we must have somewhere, and then take the square root of the whole thing. So let's see. So well, the square root of the whole thing kind of makes sense. That's because we had the s squared up here. So that's where the square root is coming from. The fact that this has to be on either side is less clear. I don't have a good intuition for you about why that's the case. But perhaps you can see in the case where rho here is a pure state, well, then the square root of a pure state density matrix is just going to be the same, right? Because it squares to itself. The projector. This basically is just doing the same projector on psi. And again, the square root is kind of irrelevant. I mean, it's not irrelevant, but it's just taking the square root of the whole thing. OK, so maybe, I mean, that's not a detailed proof, but you can maybe see how this reduces to this in that particular special case. And of course, this, it's easy to see, reduces to this. Yeah?
But symmetric than the Roman sigma?
It is. So that's that was the next thing. So we can, what are the properties of this product? Well, so one of them is that if rho equals sigma, then the fidelity between them is equal to 1. OK? So that is in fact, relatively easy to see. Because if rho is equal to sigma, in fact, if they commute, then we can just combine, move the rho 1 half past. And so we get sigma times rho. And then if they're equal, it's just rho squared. And the square root of that is rho again. So this trace of rho, which is 1. Okay, and it's maybe less obvious, but if the fidelity is 1, then rho is equal to sigma. And similarly, if the fidelity is 0, then that means that rho and sigma have orthogonal support. So this is the generalization to density matrices of two pure states being orthogonal. So this means that rho, if you write it as a sum of kind of a mixture of pure states, will have pure states that lie in one subspace. And sigma, if you write it as a mixture of pure states, will have pure states that lie in an orthogonal subspace. So any pure state that's in the decomposition of rho will be orthogonal to a pure state in the decomposition of sigma. OK? And the next property is, in fact, that it's symmetric, which is indeed not at all obvious from the definition, but it's still true. And the third fairly important property is that if you take these two density matrices, rho and sigma, and you rotate them both by some unitary, that doesn't change the fidelity. OK, so why is that? Well, that one's not too hard to see. So if you take the square root of u rho u dagger, that's equal to u square root of rho and then u dagger. We can just take that out. And so then the u dagger is kind of all collide in the middle here. So you have a u dagger out front, but the cyclicity of the trace will kill that too. I guess you have to take those out of the square root too. OK? So what this means is that it's unitarily invariant, which is good because it means it's not a basis-dependent quantity. I mean, I said you can calculate the square root by diagonalizing the diagonal value. But it's important that doing that doesn't change it when you change basis. Yeah?
Does that hold for CPTPs as well?
No, it doesn't. So there's a related relation that I'll get to later. But let me hold off on this. I mean, so it's maybe you can immediately see that it's not the case, because there's a completely positive trace-preserving map, which is take your density matrix, throw it out, replace it by some standard state. So if you apply that to both rho and sigma, then you get the same state. And their fidelity afterwards will be 1.
Okay.
So actually, that's what's going to happen, is the fidelity is going to be able to increase, but it can't decrease under general maps. OK? So any questions so far? Yeah?
Some sort of metric or
Well, it's some sort of metric. It's not literally a metric for a couple of reasons. The most obvious one is it's just not set up correctly, because they're the same when it's 1 and 0 when they're far. 1 minus fidelity is closer. I can't remember offhand whether it's actually a metric. It discusses this in Nielsen and Frank. But the second distance measure that we'll get to it actually is a metric. Yeah? Sorry, how what? The third property from the definition. Okay, so so what I'm going to claim here is that if you have the square root of u eta u dagger, that's equal to u square root of eta u dagger. And let's see. I think you can address this by looking at the eigenvectors. I mean, the argument I made about diagonalization kind of includes this assumption. But so this is the property that I need. And then you take trace square root of u row u dagger is 1/2 u sigma u dagger u row u dagger is 1/2. Then, well, the u daggers come out of these square roots. They die in the middle here, and so you get square root of u row is 1/2 sigma row is 1/2 u dagger. And then these u daggers come out. And then the trace is cyclic, so we can move the u dagger over here, and then they kill each other. And then we get back the original. OK? OK. Other questions on fidelity so far? Yeah.
Like, if I have a bunch of copies of rho and sigma, can I measure the fidelity physically?
Let's see. I mean, certainly it's possible to measure it to some accuracy level, which is, I mean, there's a trivial way to do it, which is, I guess I was going to discuss state tomography, but you can, by doing enough measurements on a state, you can find out the density matrix to a certain amount of precision.
Really,
and then once you, so that's obviously not a very good way to do this for a variety of reasons. Actually, I'm not sure if there's a way to measure the fidelity directly.
So I suppose the question is, why does it matter? Like, when they're both pure states?
Well, it's actually, yeah. So if one of them is a pure state, then it's easy, right? Because I showed you what you can do. You measure, I mean, you don't even, in that case, I guess you need to know what one of them are, what one of them is. And then you can measure the fidelity to the other one.
But
this is tricky. But let's see. If you have two unknown states,
okay.
So if you have two unknown pure states, there is a way actually to measure fidelity, which is kind of a nice little trick. So what you can do is this. So here we'll put in psi, and here we'll put in phi, and what we're going to do here is a controlled swap. So this ancilla is going to start at 0 plus 1. And if so it's a controlled swap. So if the ancilla is 0, we don't do anything. If the ancilla is 1, we do a swap. OK? And then we do, so if these two are actually the same, right, if fidelity is 1, then actually nothing happens at all up here. Right, because, this just stayed the same, and so we end up with 0 plus 1. Then we do a Hadamard and measure, and we would always get 0. On the other hand, if these are very different, then what's going to happen is the ancilla gets entangled with these states. And so the Hadamard is kind of going to detect that. So it turns out that you get 0 with probability, which is, I believe, something like this. Maybe this is squared. So I don't remember the exact formula. Something like this, and then 1 with probability 1 minus the inner product. Okay? And so, as I said, if sci-fi, their inner product is 1, then you'll always get 0. And if they're orthogonal, then you'll get 0 with probability half and 1 with probability half. So by, I mean, obviously you have to do this a few times to get good enough statistics. But kind of the expectation value of this measurement is linearly related to the fidelity. Now this relies on them being pure states. So the same thing will not work if they're mixed states. I mean, if they're mixed states and they're identical, this you still won't automatically even get 0 here. So I'm not sure if there's a way to do it with a mixed state. Yeah.
Would it be being controlled there?
So this is a controlled swap.
Oh, okay.
So it's if the control is 0, do nothing. If the control is 1, swap. Okay. So some of these other quantities that, I mean, I haven't actually talked about so much, but if you have some polynomial function of rho and sigma, then there are ways to measure that. Again, you know, to some precision, but there's some measurement you can make whose expectation value tells you that quantity. But since this is not a polynomial function, I'm not sure if there's a good way to do that. It's a good question. Okay? Other questions? You can ask easier questions. I'm happy to answer easy questions. Okay, so there's one more property of fidelity which kind of explains this weird definition. I mean, it explains in the level of, well, once you prove this theorem, then you understand why that's the right definition. And that's Holman's theorem. So Ullmann's theorem says that the fidelity between rho and sigma is equal to the maximum over some state phi and some state phi, which I'll constrain in a moment, of the pure state fidelity between psi and phi. Okay? And psi has the property that so psi and phi are acting on some bipartite Hilbert space. Let me write the theorem more carefully. So rho and sigma act on system Q, or states on system Q. Psi and phi are states on R tensor Q. And Psi and phi are purifications of rho and sigma. So in particular, the trace over R of psi is equal to rho. And the trace over R of phi is equal to sigma. OK? So what this is saying conceptually is that the fidelity between rho and sigma is the best achievable between purifications of Rho and Sigma. Okay, so this kind of is useful if you want to talk about purifications of states, right? Because it tells you, well, so the point is there's more than one purification of any given mixed state, right? Because you can purify it into a system R tensor Q, and then you can do any unitary you want on R, and it's still a purification, right? That doing a unitary on R is not going to change the density matrix on Q. That was one of your tutorial problems. So if you have two states, well, if you rotate the R system for both of them, well, the fidelity won't change, right? That's this property. But if you only rotate it for one of them on the R system, of course, the fidelity will change. So what you have to do is you have to purify them and then adjust the R system to try to get them as close together as possible. So it's not quite the same as saying that you want them to be as close together as possible on the R system, right? Because these are entangled states. But somehow jointly, you can get them as close together as possible. And that will get you back exactly the fidelity that you calculated for the mixed states. So one way of looking at this theorem is that, again, it's a way of you can go either way. You can say, well, if I had the global states, one way of saying is if I have the mixed states, then I know how to purify them sensibly and still talk about the fidelity. The other way of saying, well, I prefer to talk about pure states, and I think of the pure state of the whole universe, and so I have the fidelity between these two pure states. But now if I don't want to do that, if I just want to talk about a subsystem, I can go back to the mixed states, and the fidelity is still sensible. Okay. Of course, in general, you can have states which are distinguishable on R tensor Q and become less distinguishable when you throw away information. But this says that there's some kind of limit to that, depending on if you pick the best possible purifications. OK? OK, are there any more questions on this? Then I'm going to move on to the other notion of distance. OK. So then let's talk about the trace distance. So the trace distance, it makes sense just to go right into the definition for density matrices. And that's this. So it's half of, so the half is not really important. It's just some kind of normalization thing. It's half of the trace of the absolute value of rho minus sigma. OK? So what this means is that you take the positive eigenvalues of rho minus sigma and add them to the absolute value of the negative eigenvalues. Right, so if you diagonalize rho minus sigma, so you have some big matrix, you have some plus eigenvalues and some minus eigenvalues. And so these plus eigenvalues are ones that appear more strongly kind of in rho than in sigma. I mean, that's just an approximation because, of course, rho and sigma don't have to commute. They don't have to be simultaneously diagonalizable. So these eigenvectors don't have to be eigenvectors of either one of these. But the difference is still a Hermitian matrix, so you can still diagonalize it. And you look at the plus eigenvalues, they're kind of more strongly towards rho, and the minus eigenvalues are more strongly towards sigma. And so then the grace distance is basically the average, I guess. The average of the sum of these positive eigenvalues and the sum of the negative eigenvalues, taken absolute value. Okay? So it kind of gives you, if rho and sigma are very close, then none of these will be very large, because things will only be slightly more towards rho or slightly more towards sigma. If they're very far apart, then these things will be very big, and these things will be very small. Somehow I didn't write this on my page, but because trace of rho and sigma are both equal to 1, if you take the trace of rho minus sigma, you'll get 0, right? So actually, the positive eigenvalues, their sum is equal to the sum of the negative eigenvalues. Right, again with a minus sign. So it would be just as good to, and since we're dividing by 2, this is just as good to say take the sum of the positive eigenvalues. Okay. And actually I believe, but again I forgot to write it down, that this trace distance is at most 1. That the trace distance here is at most 1. Okay. So what's part of the motivation for this definition? Well, part of the motivation is that there's a classical definition of the distance between two probability distributions that's very closely related. In fact, this is just the quantum generalization. So what's that? Well, that's 1/2 the sum over I of pi minus qi. Okay, pi is the probability that when you draw from the distribution that you get result I. Qi is the probability that you'll get result I from this distribution. And so what we do is we take the difference of those two. Sorry, we should absolute value this. And then add that up and divide by 2. And you can see that if rho and sigma are classical probability distributions, so they're both diagonal in the standard basis, that's exactly what you get. Right? So this is just the generalization to the case where you can have more general quantum probability distributions, basically. Okay? So these things are known by various names. Probably the most common other name you'll see is the L1 distance. Okay, and in fact, this is exactly the L1 norm, taken appropriately.
Does the L2 or L17 norm ever come into play?
Yes, absolutely. The L2 norm is actually most closely related to this fidelity. It's not exactly the fidelity, but. The L2 norm is basically this Hilbert-Schmidt metric that I made an aside to. The higher L norms do appear also in some circumstances, but they're maybe slightly less common. L infinity is nice. L infinity is the biggest eigenvalue.
Right.
So it's not so useful so much for the difference between two density matrices to tell you the distance, but on a single state, it can be very useful. yeah, I wouldn't want to give a comprehensive listing of when these things can appear. But yeah, they other things show up too.
Just a general question, whenever I show something
with the parameter. Right. Yeah, the L0 norm doesn't show up there. Okay. Or it does show up often, depending on your point. Okay, sorry. Okay, so what are the properties of this trace system? So so this trace distance is a metric. So what does that mean? Well, if you're familiar with the definition of a metric, you know what it means. But if just in case not, let me go through. So it means that that when the trace distance is zero, that means that the states are actually the same. And in fact, that's the only time when trace distance is zero. Right? That's easy to see, I think, from this picture, right? If rho equals sigma, then this is just a zero matrix. So clearly you get zero. And the only way this can be a zero matrix is if the distance difference is zero. Okay? It's also symmetric. That's required. And that's much easier to see from the definition in this case, right? Because we have the absolute value in there. So absolute value of rho minus sigma is equal to the absolute value of sigma minus rho. And then the third one, more non-trivial, is the triangle inequality. And I guess you can probably prove that from the triangle inequality for absolute value of the difference. Not sure if there's any subtleties in doing it with matrices or not. But basically, this is true too. Okay? Finally, one property that's not related directly to the metric is that it's also unitarily invariant, like the fidelity. So maybe that's not too hard to see either. So if you take U rho U dagger, U sigma U dagger, you can certainly take the U dagger outside the minus sign, because that's linear operation. The eigenvalues of something that's rotated by U are not going to change. So if you look at this picture, kind of again applying the cyclicity of the trace, you get back to the original formula. Yeah.
Is it useful to associate the notion of curvature with the parallel transport or quotients of
curvature with parallel transport by U. You mean in the using this metric?
Right. I mean, using this as kind of a imagery operation.
Right. Right. Let me think. Certainly there is a curvature associated with, you know, the manifolds of states. With density matrices, it's a manifold with boundary, but that's not really relevant. Actually, I think it may just be flat. I'm not certain of that, but it doesn't seem very likely. But
So there's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah, so I can't think of a case where somebody has used that. I haven't thought too much about the geometry of state space. A lot of people do think about the geometry of state space, but mostly they're interested in where these boundaries are, because those are kind of weird. And yeah, I think it's probably just flat. Because it's basically a matrix space, which, you know, just is R some larger value. Okay. So then there's one more property of, well, there's several more properties, but the first property of the Kreis distance that I'd like to bring up is kind of motivates the definition and gives you, again, a relationship between the quantum definition and the classical definition of a statistical difference, distance. So okay, so what I'm saying here is you take the optimal POVM to try to distinguish between rho and sigma. So you're given one density matrix. You know it's either rho or sigma. You know what rho and sigma are. But you don't know which one you have. So you take the optimal measurement you can make, the optimal POVM. And then the trace distance between rho and sigma is equal to the statistical difference, right? This classical statistical difference between the probability distribution you get for by measuring rho with that POVM versus the probability distribution you get by measuring sigma with that POVM. Okay. And then the statistical difference is itself related to kind of your chance of guessing correctly which of two probability distributions you have. So this is Kreis distance is related to the best chance to guess which of rho and sigma. Okay. And your actual best chance kind of depends a little bit on the rules of the game. But this is kind of conceptually what it does. Yeah.
The notation on the right-hand side, it's a distance, trace distance of two numbers?
So EM is a POVM, right? So there's multiple possible outcomes.
So
rho EM, trace rho EM, is a probability distribution over outcomes, as is Kreis sigma in the end. So now it's finally time to answer Chris's question from earlier. What about CP maps? And the answer is, well, so both of these distances, Kreis distance and fidelity, are unitarily invariant. So if you do a unitary, the kind of the distance or fidelity between the states doesn't change. But if you do some more general operation, well, as I indicated, you might lose information, right? You might, for instance, throw out the state altogether and replace them with some standard state. And therefore, the distance would drop to zero. And in fact, that's the most general thing you can do. Nothing you can do can increase distinguishability. If you have a CP-TP map, completely positive trace-preserving map, then D of E of rho, E of sigma is less than or equal to D of rho sigma. And the fidelity between E of rho and E of sigma is greater than or equal to the fidelity between rho sigma, right? Because for trace distance, smaller distance means closer. For fidelity, higher means closer, right? Because fidelity 1 is when they're the same. Okay? So this is really important. And this is actually kind of conceptually the keystone of this whole distinguishability paradigm. I mean, it tells you that distinguishability is some kind of invariant property of the states. So it's something that can be lost, but it can never be gained by any valid quantum operation. And I mean, at some level, this is required to kind of preserve the whole Heisenberg uncertainty principle picture, right? Because otherwise, there would be some quantum operation you could do that would make it easier to distinguish between different states. And then you could get more information out about what those states were. OK? Here.
Yeah, can we, because those things are numbers, so can we replace that with big Z for
the No, they're not numbers, they're probability distributions. Right? Because there's multiple possible outcomes, this Q of the N. I mean, it's enough actually just to think of two possible outcomes, two outcome Q of the N's. But even so, there's two probability distributions here. So I guess in that case, you know that you kind of know the relationship between the you have the E that says it's closer to rho and the E that says it's closer to sigma. And so then there's just one number which kind of gives you, those two have to add up to one. So there's one number that kind of tells you where you are. In that case, I guess you could simplify it that way. But in general, the way I've written it, these are whole lists of probabilities. Because it's in general, Q of the N could have many outcomes. OK. I guess one thing I didn't say but is that this is not actually a very hard theorem to prove. Basically, to prove this, you can, as I said, it's enough to think of two outcome POVMs. And in fact, you can let one of those outcomes be the projector on this plus eigenspace of rho minus sigma, and the other one be the projector on the minus eigenspace. And then the plus eigenspace you kind of associate with being more likely to be rho, the minus one is more likely to be sigma. And that's actually the best thing you can do to distinguish between rho and sigma. OK. But then I just want to finish with one more theorem, which is what's the relationship between trace distance and fidelity. In general, these two are not related in a simple formula. But it is true that if two states are very close in one measure, they're very close in the other measure. And one way to quantify that is the following theorem. Need a little more space here. Okay. So in particular, if fidelity is very close to 1, then this thing is small and this thing is small. And that tells you the trace distance is also small. Okay. But on the other hand, when fidelity is far from 1, these bounds are not very good. And there's a big range that d of sigma could run over. Okay. Okay. Well, that was all I had for today. So we have another 5 minutes if people want to ask kind of random questions about stuff we've done during the week. Yeah.
In Ullmann's theorem, is there a recipe for constructing the psi and the phi that maximize the fidelity?
Yeah, there is. So basically, what you want to do, let's see. Yeah, there is, but I guess I don't remember it offhand. The if rho and sigma commute, then it's pretty straightforward. You diagonalize them simultaneously, which you can do when they commute, and then you kind of just you use that basis and purify in kind of just with the same kind of technique for both of them. You use the same basis for R. So if they're both diagonal, then so we have lambda 1, lambda 2, et cetera, and eta 1, eta 2, et cetera. And so this is kind of the I basis for Q. And so then one of them is going to be lambda I R tensor I W, and the other is going to be eta I, or maybe square root of I R. More generally, I'm not sure. But I'm pretty sure there is a kind of constructive argument. But it might be Nielsen and Trine. So next week, we're going to be doing a slightly different topic. We're going to start talking about complexity and quantum algorithms. So this is kind of the end of the basic tools stuff. A lot of the basic tools I won't actually use in the course, but certainly if you start going out into literature and reading quantum information papers, you'll encounter these concepts all over the place. Okay, so no more questions about what we've done this week? Everyone understood it all? Okay, well, if you come up with questions over the weekend, the offer to answer them is not expiring now. Okay. Sure.